Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Here in Ireland for over 40 years, that's four decades of trust, reliability and expertise. Visit Zurich.ie.
Now, the press conference between Keir Starmer and Donald Trump has just ended. And during the hour-long event, a range of issues were raised. But by the standards of Trump conferences, it was quite muted. Sparks flew about disagreements over recognition of the Palestinian state and Trump's meeting with Vladimir Putin in Alaska. And asked by Sky's political editor, Beth Rigby, if he has any sympathy for Peter Mandelson, Donald Trump replied, "I don't know him." Well, we'll pick all of this apart now. I'm joined by Jennifer Ewing from Republicans Overseas UK, James Politti, who's the Washington Bureau Chief for the Financial Times, and John Tong is Professor of Politics at Liverpool University. You're all very welcome to the programme. John Tong, I might turn to you first of all. What did you think of it?
Well, I think that the UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer will be mopping his brow and pouring himself a large drink very shortly indeed, because he got away with it there. There was an awful lot of capacity for things to go horribly wrong. But as you said in the introduction, that was about as muted a press conference as I've ever seen Donald Trump give. Of course, that there were the occasional awkward moments, not least the differences over Gaza, where Keir Starmer is moving towards recognition of a Palestinian state. Donald Trump made clear his disagreement with that, but it was almost a respectful disagreement. So, you know, basically there was an awful, the obsequiousometer and the flatteryometers were working overtime throughout the visit. But a lot of that flattery came from Donald Trump, mm-hmm. from saying Chequers was quite the place, through to the bonds between our two countries are like nothing else. There's more good come from these two countries on this planet than any other two countries. That, you know, that's just quoting Donald Trump's effusiveness.
Do you think, though, that Keir Starmer would be picked up by the press in any way in the UK for letting Donald Trump get away with what some would describe as untruths around, certainly there was a disagreement on Gaza, but about NATO and how European countries failed in their defence and so on. And there were other untruths that Donald Trump iterated, you could say, without being checked.
Yeah, I mean, the Mandelson non-recognition was one of potentially many untruths. Then there was the claim that NATO, all NATO countries will be spending 5% of GDP on defence. That's an aspiration for the UK government, but it hasn't got the financial means at present to actually reach that, but it was rather glossed over. And at one point, Donald Trump was basically, he said, wind is a disaster, and was telling Keir Starmer to effectively revise his fuel policy and use the North Sea. He also suggested that the military could be used to stop illegal immigration to the UK. So, you know, there was an awful lot where things could have gone horribly wrong. And, yet
and
somehow,
the freedom of speech was sidestep by Keir Starmer, was it not, as well?
Yeah, I had to. I mean, Keir Starmer made the point, you know, he offered sympathy in terms of the shooting, the murder of Charlie Kirk. And I think that assuaged the president, whereas that could have turned ugly as well. So all in all, you know, it was a quite, by Trumpian standards, this was a quiet and serene press conference.
Mm-hmm. Was it a success for the UK Prime Minister, or will he be seen as sycophantic and lacking conviction by some in the UK?
Well, there's a recognition, I think, amongst the British public, you've got to do business with who the US president is. It doesn't matter whether it's Joe Biden or Donald Trump, whoever. You've got to do it because the US is, by some distance, our largest single trading partner. And both the president and the prime minister, you know, talked about the $250 billion that flows both ways across the Atlantic. In terms of substantive trade deals, there were little bits and pieces, and the UK has broadly a trade deal. I mean, Trump played to Starmer's own sort of propensity to be flattered when he said, you know, this guy's a tough negotiator. That made Starmer look good, and Starmer will certainly welcome those comments. How good a trade deal it is for the UK, I think only time can tell.
Were you surprised there was only one question on Jeffrey Epstein, given the fact that Donald Trump is ravaged in the US by questions within the Senate and in the press around his links, alleged links with Jeffrey Epstein, and also the fact that the US ambassador to the US has just been taken down by that scandal?
There was a determination both with the president and the prime minister to move on very quickly from that. Trump only had a single sentence in response to that, simply saying he didn't know Mandelson. Well, without bigging up the UK ambassador to the United States, I think that's it's inconceivable. that Donald Trump didn't know who Peter Mandelson is, and that there will certainly be some sort of follow-up to that. And obviously, for obvious reasons, Keir Starmer didn't want to dwell on the sorry debacle of him having to sack the UK ambassador to the United States. So they moved on quickly. I mean, virtually the next step in the press conference was to call it to a close. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was the way they dealt with it, by not dealing with it, as it were.
I'm going to move to Jennifer Ewing in just a second. My final question to you, Professor John Tong, though, is, was this clever politics from Keir Starmer, or did he come across as emasculated?
I think, you know, everyone knows that you have to be deferential to the US president. And as I say, you know, the flatteryometer was working overtime. I think the problem for Keir Starmer now is, what else can he play in terms of cozying up to the United States? Because you can't offer a third state visit. It was an unprecedented state visit as it was, second state visit. I think the question begged now is, will the relationship be of substance? I mean, Keir Starmer will be greatly encouraged by what Donald Trump said about that Putin had let him down. On Ukraine, they are virtually on the same page. On other aspects of foreign policy, whether it be NATO spending, but less so on that, but certainly on Gaza, there's still a big gulf between them that I don't think is bridgeable, quite frankly.
Okay, Professor John Tong, thank you. Jennifer Ewing from Republican Overseas UK and James Politi in the Washington Bureau Chief for the FT is with me as well. I might come to you, Jennifer Ewing, first of all. What did you make of the press conference?
Yeah, I mean, I think you said it earlier, Cormac, that, you know, it was quite subdued. I think they were both incredibly polite to one another, for sure. There were, you know, the two messages that I took across from it coming from President Trump were basically, you know, drill, baby, drill, you know, and use the North Sea oil. He seemed incredibly impressed with those resources, even invoked his mother, you know, being from Scotland at one point when discussing the importance of having a good energy sector. And then, of course, the second thing would have been stop the boats. And, mm-hmm. you know, he talked about illegal invasions can destroy countries from within and just sort of warned of those dangers. So those were two of the things he was outspoken about. I think he actually was quite, you know, he toned things down a bit when he was asked, oh, you know, do you think there's free speech in the United Kingdom? Now, we know for a fact that President Trump has been critical about
his vice president
in the United
as well.
Kingdom.
And what did you make of that? What did you make of that when he said, I think it was Robert Peston was asking, is there more of a problem with freedom of speech and the restriction of freedom of speech in the US than there is in the UK? What did you make of the response?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I thought that was... he could have really launched into it and, you know, talked about Ground Linham. He could have talked about Lucy Connolly. He could have talked about the fact that in the United States, we do not have hate speech laws. Actually, you know, it's all about incitement and it's the Brandenburg test, which is very difficult to, you know, the incitement has to be imminent and likely. So he really could have gone for him there.
He could have been one way, but so could the press have gone for the US president as well. Let's have a listen to the response.
In what way?
Well, let's have a listen to this in relation to a question about Jimmy Kimmel.
Well, Jimmy Kimmel was fired because he had bad ratings more than anything else. And he said a horrible thing about a great gentleman known as Charlie Kirk. And Jimmy Kimmel is not a talented person. He had very bad ratings and they should have fired him a long time ago. So, you know, you can call that free speech or not. He was fired for lack of talent.
What did you make of that, Jennifer?
He's not wrong on that.
Just to be fair to you, I think we missed the very start of your response. So what did you make of it?
Oh, I said, I agree with the president. Jimmy Kimmel was fired because he had terrible ratings, just like Stephen Colbert before him. And, you know, these networks were losing money on these late night comedians because they went from being funny to being overly partisan. So that was the free market deciding.
What are you basing that on? Because we're told that the show is, that he wasn't fired, that the show was being preempted. Suspended for a time, and all reports suggest that it's in relation to Jimmy Kimmel's monologue about Donald Trump's response to Charlie Kirk's murder, where he went on very quickly to talk about building a hall in the White House.
Yeah, you know what? I think that the Charlie Kirk comment was probably just one of many in which, whether it was advertisers or whether it was viewers, were turning away from some of these late night so-called comedians who had become political hacks. So President Trump did not fire Jimmy Kimmel. His employer did because he was,
wasn't it?
Excuse me?
It was pressure. It was pressure from the White House. Isn't that the truth of it? It's not bad.
No, that's absolutely not the truth of it. ABC is a business. And again, look at the numbers. They were losing money. And these guys were on massive salaries.
What about the Trump lawsuit on the New York Times? What about the Trump lawsuit on the New York Times that the Times is talking about today?
Yes, exactly. Right. And you can talk about the New York Times. You can talk about ABC and you can talk about CBS, where that was... that was defamation. And
is that not
the
a restriction
people,
of the freedom of speech?
Well, defamation is different than freedom of speech. And again, the networks settled with President Trump saying, you're right. our newscasters did defame you, and they paid him out. So we'll see what happens in the New York Times case. You can, there's freedom of speech, and then there's, there's defamation. So we'll see what the court says about that. But this idea that Trump fired Jimmy Kimmel is just...
It's not true.
And going after the
New York Times and other outlets to the tune of billions of euro in his claim sometimes, that's not restricting freedom of speech, you say?
Boy, I not if it's defamation, no. And I mean, let's look at how many people, including networks in the United Kingdom and Ireland, have not come out and apologized for misrepresenting the what we now of years now known as the Russia collusion hoax. So a lot of things were said that were factually incorrect against the president. So he has a right to defend himself just like anybody else does when untrue things are said against him.
Okay.
You'll remember, you guys all reported on this Russia collusion hoax, which was factually incorrect.
Perhaps the man on the other line would want to weigh in on this conversation. Stay with me, Jennifer Ewing, James Politi,
sure.
Washington Bureau Chief for the EFT, Financial Times. You're in the UK, am I correct, James?
Yes, that's correct. I'm in London.
Okay. So I don't know if you were at the press conference, but I'm sure you were watching. Can you give me your reaction? What did you think of it?
Well, I think it was a clear effort to kind of paper over, any differences between Trump and Starmer. I think clearly coming at the end of a sort of lavish celebratory state visit, it would have taken a lot for sort of the press conference to blow everything up. And I think both the president and the prime minister realized that. But there was still some evident friction over some issues like Gaza, like energy, even Russia and Ukraine. So it kind of begs the question of, is this sort of the high watermark of the Trump-Starmer relationship? Are things set to become more tense going forward? That's entirely possible.
Well, I was just, sorry to intervene, I was just going to say, in terms of getting tense, it was tense at one point in the press conference when there was a question from Beth Rigby of Sky about the Epstein links. So let's have a listen.
Finally, if I may, the elephant in the room, Lord Mandelson. He is no longer the ambassador. Do you have some sympathy with him that he lost his job over historic links to Jeffrey Epstein? Thank you very much, sir.
I don't know him, actually. I had heard that, and I think maybe the prime minister would be better speaking of that. That was a choice that he made, and I don't know. What is your answer to that?
Well, I mean, it's very straightforward. Some information came to light last week which wasn't available when he was appointed, and I made a decision about it, and that's... very clear.
James, I don't know him, he says, in relation to Peter Mandelson. Is that true?
Well, I mean, they were certainly in the Oval Office together when they agreed the US-UK trade deal back in May. So we know that they were in the same room together for that occasion. and which makes it hard to believe that they didn't know each other, that President Trump did not know.
I think he thanked Peter Mandelson.
You know, the former ambassador. And I think that, you know, I think Trump responded to that by passing the baton to Keir Starmer, I think probably cleverly, and the British Prime Minister gave the response that he has given from the beginning about the sacking of Lord Mandelson, which is that it was based on new information, which, you know, has come out through the congressional committees and the disclosures of additional information about Jeffrey Epstein in the last few weeks.
So stay with me, James. It's inconceivable, said Professor John Tong, that Donald Trump didn't know Peter Mandelson, Jennifer. He was standing right beside him in the Oval Office. And if memory serves me correctly, he thanked Peter Mandelson for his work on the US-UK trade deal. What is he on about here?
Oh, absolutely. And to be honest, like, what I heard is I don't know them. And I thought he was referring to the reasons why, you know, these latest stories that had come out. But let's say he said, I don't know
He said,
right?
I don't know
we
him.
We all saw him you know, in the Oval Office a few weeks ago or a few months ago. So I'm thinking, I think what he says, I don't know him, is then he really doesn't, you know, not in the biblical sense, obviously, but, you know, I don't know him that well. And I think it was the right thing to do to pass
sorry,
it back
I,
to the
sorry,
prime
I
minister.
Don't understand what you mean.
You don't understand what I mean. I'm saying he obviously didn't mean I don't know him. Like, he didn't mean I'd never met him, because we all know he's met him, because we have pictures of them standing together. So that's obviously not what he meant. Mm-hmm. I think what he meant is he didn't know him that well. He didn't know, you know, the whole details of why Mandelson was sacked. And I think that was quite elegant. I mean, he's putting it back to his host, the Prime Minister, to answer, and I think that is the right thing to do.
He didn't know him intimately.
I didn't know him well, you know?
But he knew him well.
Well, I'll tell you something. Well, of course he knew him.
Okay.
You know, he's not denying that he knew him.
But he didn't know him.
Getting quite semantic, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't.
Your
you see, I have
like,
no idea.
We're getting into
when
the
somebody
semantics.
When somebody is negotiating a trade deal with somebody, and somebody is standing beside them, and they thank them for their work on that, and that he mentions a close relationship and so on, and then weeks later he says, "I didn't know him." I just don't understand it.
Okay, Cormac, we can all agree that he knew him. I think for the purposes of why he was sacked, standing right in front of the Prime Minister, it was the right thing to do to pass it back to the Prime Minister. Don't forget,
because
this is a domestic UK story. Nobody outside of very small Washington, D.C. circles even knows who Peter Mandelson is.
But he was ambassador to the U.S., dealing with the President.
I know. But what I'm saying is, and this is not disrespect to the United Kingdom, most Americans don't know the, you know, other countries' ambassadors to the United States. So this is a purely domestic story.
Even ones linked by the Jeffrey Epstein scandal, allegedly.
Well, I mean, Peter Mandelson's name is, you know, probably a blip on the last back pages of some paper somewhere in the United States. He's not a story in the United States, is all I'm saying.
Okay. So, well, he was on the front pages of many papers in the US last week. Look, Jennifer Ewing of Republican Overseas UK, thank you so much indeed for joining us. James Bility of the FT, thank you beforehand. Professor John Tong, thanks as well.